Welcome to Chef Special on the Bee Lee Podcast Network. This is Patrick Honeywell. Today, my special guest is the creator and founder of Mangio with Michelle, Michelle DiPietro. Cookbook author, food writer, menu and recipe developer, professional chef, and culinary consultant. On today's podcast, we discuss Michelle's innovative cookbook titled Soupified, which features soup recipes inspired by your favorite dishes, such as eggplant parmesan, clams casino, chicken marsala, lasagna, and Philly cheesesteak. Dishes transformed into hearty soups. So let's get ready to ditch the dish and embrace the bowl. Hey, Michelle, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me. Excited to talk to you.
Hey, I'm excited. I'm the one that just did one of your recipes recently that we'll talk about in just a minute, and it was amazing. So, I'm super excited. So listen, for people that haven't been following you yet, I mean, you have a lot of followers. It's really, really, you have so many, you have a great Instagram account. You've got a super website, which I just went through heavy last night to get ready for the show. And it's amazing. So we'll talk a bit about each, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a chef?
Let's see. Well, I didn't start out as a chef. I started out my career as a CPA. I was an auditor. I was an accounting major in college. But, you know, let's just back up a little bit more before that. I came from a fairly traditional Italian-American family. You know, all four grandparents were immigrants in early turn of the century. And so food and cooking was a big part of my life. I had a stay-at-home mom, and I started cooking with her side by side when I was about 5 years old, presumably because I really loved to eat. You know, so it was just a very comfortable space for me. So actually, when you asked me when I was a little girl, what do you want to be when you grow up? I used to say a chef, but I didn't really go in that direction. You know, I didn't really have family in the food industry, and I was also very into academics. So I never really considered food as a career until I was in a career that I just wasn't very passionate about. And, you know, although I don't regret it, because actually working for such a big company, a public accounting firm, gave me the opportunity to live in Switzerland for 2 years in my mid-20s, which I do have to say was very, you know, life-defining for me in terms of just opening my eyes and taste buds to so many more foods, having had the opportunity to travel all over Europe at a very young age. And it also gave me the courage to come back when I came back to the States to change my career. And I basically did a complete 180, and I went to cooking and I enrolled in cooking school.
Awesome.
in Philadelphia. Moved back in with my parents. I was 27 years old and moved back in because I wasn't going to be making any money. And that was fine because it was just, you know, meant to be a short term. And that was it, really. I mean, I say that was it. Obviously, it was a long, thoughtful process to get to that point. But my intention was not to really work in restaurants. And I knew that going in, like I knew that that wasn't my calling. I thought that maybe I would go into the specialty food industry and that I could combine my business background with food in some way. So I figured going to cooking school was the best way to figure all that out. So I didn't actually open up my own store, but I did end up working in the specialty natural foods industry for a really long time in retail food. I actually worked for a small company called Whole Foods Market. You might have heard of them.
Oh, very, very small, yes.
Yeah. And I was with them for a really long time, and I really loved it. And eventually, there were a couple of career changes along the way. And then I eventually went out on my own. And back in 2015, I started consulting as an independent culinary consultant. And so I still do that. But somewhere along the line, I also, let's put it this way. When you're an independent consultant, there are peaks and valleys in terms of how busy you are. And during one of the times when I wasn't that busy, I started Mangio with Michelle, which was my, let's say, dedication to the side of me that's very, very passionate about everything and anything Italian food, Italian ingredients, culture, and all that kind of stuff. And that's how I got to Mangio with Michelle. So,
well, Mangio, now that means eat, right? Or food?
It does.
Food? Okay, that I like. It's perfect.
Mangiare is the verb to eat. Mangiare.
Okay, that sounds more Italian. That sounds perfect. So, yeah, it's apparent when I look at your website and I look at, and I've had your book, your cookbook is killer. You obviously have a love of food and sharing food. And it's really interesting to see that you do a lot of really great foods, but you started leaning, or maybe you lean a bit to soup. And it's National Soup Month, right? So what the heck? Let's talk about soup just a bit.
It is National Soup Month. Well, I've always loved making soup. And in fact, I think when I first got into the professional side of the industry and food service, one of the things I used to make a lot of was soup. I worked in a grocery store, mm-hmm. and we used to make the soup that we sold in-house, and I would be making 20, 30 gallons of soup at a time. And it was just one of those things that I learned how to make over and over again really, really well. Not to say, of course, I grew up making soup with my mom, but we're talking about like more innovative and different soups than what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always had said since then that if somebody knows how to make soup, then they know how to cook, because soup is, if you are able to basically open up your pantry or open up your refrigerator and know you want to make, you know, you're in the mood for soup and you're able to put a soup together, then you know, that means you know how to cook. It's a very basic fundamental technique. It does require like some creativity for sure. Depending on what kind of soup you're going to make. And, you know, being someone who's in the industry and who's a chef, I think probably every food service professional has a dream of writing their own cookbook. So it's something that I had thought about for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But I always let work and life get in the way. You know, I always worked a very demanding job and never really made time for it. And then come 2020 and my consulting basically just like everything just stopped, because I basically work with food service, restaurants, that kind of stuff. Everything just stopped. And I had a lot of time, and I'm in a New York City apartment with no outdoor space, and we were being told to not leave. So I had this, I'm like, all right, well, maybe I'll do an ebook. And to me, an ebook in my mind, for whatever reason, just meant like a PDF of maybe 5 recipes that I would like put together and maybe sell on my website, which wasn't ready yet, by the way, my website, that is. But then like everything else I do, I can't do anything small. So one thing led to another. And like, I started to, you know, just brainstorm all different types of soups. And then I learned about, you know, what it would take to put a print book together. And then I ended up doing the soup cookbook. Soupified, soups inspired by your favorite dishes. Yes.
That's an amazing, I don't think I've seen anything like quite like that, you know?
It's nothing like it.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, the first of its kind.
So, okay, let's talk a little bit about soup versus stew.
A stew is not a soup, but a stew is soup-like, mm-hmm. right? So a stew could very easily be made into a soup with smaller pieces and more liquid.
Okay.
So
okay.
There, I said it. People might disagree with it, but which is why actually I didn't choose any soup-like dishes for Soupified.
Gotcha.
So let me just back up a little bit. Soupified, soups inspired by your favorite dishes, is a cookbook of recipes, of soup recipes that were based on non-soup dishes. So every recipe in the book is a soup version of, that you can eat with a spoon of a classic dish that you recognize not in soup form. For example, lasagna, chicken marsala, shrimp scampi, even insalata caprese or choice baked potato. So things that you are familiar with, but they were turned into a soup. And I intentionally, when I was brainstorming recipes for the book, I didn't choose any dishes that were already kind of soup-like, like stew, because I just felt like it wasn't a big enough leap. It wasn't going to be interesting enough to me. That was, you know, that was my take on it. Now, in terms of soup as an entree versus soup as like a first course or a smaller first course, this book of recipes, Soupified, is definitely not the consommés of the world. It's not the soups that you eat before a different meal. These soups are meant to be the full meal. They are meals in and of themselves. They are total comfort food recipes. They are hearty. They have a lot of elements and taste and textures. And you eat that for your meal and you don't really need to eat anything else. In fact, when I was figuring out portion sizes, you know, I figured probably closer to 1.5 to 2 cups per portion size, mm-hmm. because that's what people are going to eat of this. And then they're going to be done.
Well, you know, and it's amazing. It's true. I actually grabbed that book, got the book in, really excited. My wife and I looked at it. I said, okay, pick 2 that you'd like me to make, because I want to make something before I talk to Michelle and do the podcast. And she looks at me, she goes, these aren't soups. I go, no, they're soups. She goes, but okay. So she, cause they look like, you know, they're read out like a main course, but they're right. Soupified, you know? So it's really cool. And she said, and she picked a couple and we determined to do the shrimp scampi, which is on page 22.
All
and
right.
I have to tell you, it's so funny. So she comes home, she starts, I made it. And there's a lot of cool elements in that book. And you introduced me to the garlic confit. I've never done that before.
Well, you've never done that?
I'm so, I mean, I am so bad, you know, because it's so,
It's so wonderful.
It's so wonderful. It's so crazy intense. And it's a simple process, which makes a ton of sense. And I have a bottle of it in glass, like you said, stored in glass in the refrigerator right now. I'm excited. So I made this, Michelle, and my wife is tasting it. And, you know, and she's going, oh, it's good. And it's good. It's good. She ended up saying, this is really good. I really like this, probably 30 times. I finally said, hey, okay, okay, whatever. And I'm being honest with you, because she is soup crazy. You know, I mean, we do moqueca. She's from Brazil, so I'll make moqueca, which is more stew-like.
Very nice.
But anyway, it is so good. And what I like, too, is that when you do your recipes, they're laid out really clearly, really good. The ingredients are awesome, and the step-by-step is simple to follow, but it's the technique is awesome. It's excellent. So anyway,
No, I mean, I appreciate you saying that because I spent a lot of time on that. And I do think that because I spent a career in recipe development on the professional level, but I also throughout my career did many, many recipes for the home cook as well. Mm-hmm. I do think that is something that I've honed over the years. However, when I did the cookbook, I still needed to tweak it because writing for a cookbook is very different than writing for a professional kitchen.
Definitely.
And I did spend a lot of time. So that means a lot to me. I really wanted to make it as easy as possible, even though some of the soups might seem intimidating because there is a long ingredient list. They really aren't intimidating. Every soup really has a very simple technique, and it's really the same technique over and over again. And once you make a couple of soups from the book, you'll realize that, yeah, you know what? You do always kind of start out the same way. Mm-hmm. And you build the flavors the same way.
Well, the list is fairly long. I mean, there's a lot of good things, but as I look closer at it, I didn't want to eliminate anything because it all made sense. It all looked really good. I thought, forget it. So I went to the store and got a couple simple things, even like a red bell pepper. I mean, come on. Who doesn't have that in their house? I didn't at the time. But I have tons of garlic, lots of lemons. But it was very refreshing, just amazing. So and then it's interesting because just to segue for just a moment, I went to your website.
Sure.
And I was looking at the recipes there and the way it's laid out, because I know I was going to ask you about soups. What's trending now in soups? What's going on in the industry or in the world or whatever? And you have a section trending. So you're actually keeping an eye on things that are trending, and your recipes on your website are also excellent. Very beautiful photos spelled out really, really well, clear. And I kind of found a home a little bit in your website. In your book, because I need inspiration as a chef too. I'm on the pastry side, but I love to cook. So I dig it. It was really cool.
Thank you. The website is new. I just launched the website in October, and I'm continually, you know, adding content to it and learning how to add content like better and faster. And I still have a lot to learn about, especially on the back end of the website. And I will say for the website, I am focusing more on, for the most part, on the Italian-American classics. Mm-hmm. Because, and I think this is one of the things that you had asked me previously, is like, what kinds of recipes do your followers ask for? And most of the recipes that people ask about and that get the most comments and engagement and excitement are the classic Italian-American recipes. Mm. And things like Italian wedding soup or pasta fagioli, minestrone, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
You know, and when you say trending, you know, I admit that I'm not quite as on top of the food trends as I have been for most of my career. I've gotten a little bit off track since focusing so much on blogging. But trending, you know, it's very seasonal, you know, so you obviously you have the holidays, and then you're in January. So it's really, well, I know you're in Southern California, but it is in the teens today. It is 12 degrees right now in New York City.
How about some soup?
Yeah. So it is cold. So you want to eat heartier soup. So that's when like the pasta and beans come out. You know, that is when things that are a little bit heartier and stick to your ribs sort of come out, you know, but bigger picture trends in the industry, a lot of things are about functional food. Like what else can you get, you know, what functions nutritionally do these dishes bring to you? You know, so that's why it's good to have great nutrient dense foods like dark leafy greens or beans. Or even, I mean, I'm a big user of miso. You might have found that out in throughout my book. I use miso in a couple of different ways. And obviously that has health benefits and just a lot of vegetables in general, I would say. Plant-based. I mean, I don't do that much plant-based because it's not really what my followers are seeking right now. But I do cook a lot of plant-based at home as well.
Well, you know, I'm going to go back to your recipe really quickly because I was thinking about and the shrimp scampi soup, and a lot of times when you look at a soup recipe, it'll say, you know, use this in this case, it's a seafood. You use seafood right. stock or chicken stock or vegetable stock. And I use chicken stock, but what would you say the difference overall would be using between the fish and the chicken? Obviously, the fish stock will be heavier with the seafood kind of a flavor and a, you know, the overall feel. I asked because I didn't have a chicken stock. I mean, excuse me, a seafood stock. I use sometimes Ina Garter, you know, the chef, she's
sure.
got... She's got a cool seafood stock recipe, and I'll use that even when I do a clam chowder. I'll use her because it's really, it's got some good stuff. It's really
so you'll make flavor. This. You'll make the seafood stock before you make that soup.
Yeah, and I'll use her yeah. seafood stock, and I'll use a different clam chowder recipe, but I use it as her the stock, and right. it's powerful, a lot of flavor.
Yeah, I mean, getting back to stock is a really great topic, and it's the very first thing that you learn in cooking school is the importance of stock and how to make stock properly, and. The differences in the underlying, or I should say in the finished soup, depending on what kind of soup it is, are probably going to be subtle, mm-hmm. you know, but if you use a seafood stock, if you use a stock that you make with shrimp shells, which I admit that I did not when I developed this recipe, because I was in crunch mode and I didn't stop to make my own stock, but it will just be so much better. You know, I mean, if you take the shrimp shells that you purchased for the shrimp scampi soup, and you take the time to make a little bit of shellfish stock, essentially, and then use that as the liquid, it is going to have a more intense and a better shrimp flavor. Having said that, it doesn't mean it's going to have a bad flavor with seafood. I'm sorry, with vegetable or chicken broth. Mm-hmm. It just won't be as intensely shrimpy.
Got you.
If that makes sense.
Well, and most people won't probably stop and make seafood stock. You know, they'll probably just go ahead and put in some seafood stock from a container or chicken stock, unless they want to go for it heavy. So
like a base. Yeah. I mean, it's also difficult. You don't find as much seafood stock to purchase out there. And what you do is probably very, very heavily salted, which is the downside. The good thing about making, not to get off on a stock tangent.
I love stock.
To make fish and seafood stock doesn't take very long. To make beef stock or chicken stock, especially beef stock, takes hours and hours and hours. Man. Seafood or shellfish actually takes, you could do it in 2 hours. At the most.
And the beef stock, are you doing, you cracking the bone, doing the marrow thing with the tomatoes or roasting?
I'm not personally cracking the bone. I will buy bones. In fact, I made beef stock last weekend and I let it go 7.5 hours, and it could have gone longer. I did 7.5 hours and I just made a wonderful beef mushroom soup with quinoa. It was really killer.
Let's talk about soups around the world a little. When you mentioned that you worked at Whole Foods, and when you develop soups, or do you like to do a theme like from Italy or Spain or France? You know, what are they doing out there in the world in soups?
Well, I mean, I think that we always were wanting, when I worked there, we were always looking, innovation was a big buzzword for us. So we were always looking to bring innovation into the menu planning. And a lot of that time, the innovation was through developing international kind of soups. For example, what's that Portuguese kale and sausage soup? Like Caldo Verde, for example.
Yeah, I should know.
Not necessarily like innovative in Portugal, because it's like your everyday chicken piscina in Portugal, but you know, it would be innovative bringing that to the US. And then what we might do is we might do a whole Portuguese, I'm giving you an example, not mm-hmm. that we actually did this, a whole Portuguese food set in the prepared foods to kind of complement that. You know, we might run that for like a month or so. Mm-hmm. Wow. We also really looked heavily at the holidays, like again, coming around to Super Bowl or football Sundays, what would people like? I actually think that the twice baked loaded potato soup that's in Soupify is a great example of something that would work during Super Bowl. Yeah. And actually, I mean, I plan out my social media that way. Right. I mean, I was
interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's Sunday football or Monday football. I don't even know what football's on.
Now, wait a minute. I've got your book right here, Michelle. What page is that twice baked stuffed potato soup on? I'm going to hold on.
Well, that's actually in the pork section because there's bacon in it.
Okay. Yeah, there it is. Twice baked loaded.
It's a twice baked loaded.
Potato with bacon. Awesome.
It's not your, like that. That's a great example of not an everyday soup.
awesome.
But I never said that this cookbook was full of, you know, like the low calorie soups. Like it's not. This is a comfort food cookbook. Yeah. So the twice baked loaded potato soup with bacon, it tastes like you're eating a twice baked potato with a spoon.
Well, I don't think anybody has ever done a book like this. I don't think they have they?
No one has done a book like this. No, because obviously I did my research beforehand. Not to say, and I write about this, you know, actually, if you read the introduction, I write about this. There's nothing, there's very little that's original out there. You know, there's everything has been done before. And I am certainly not the first person to have ever come up with a lasagna soup. I would never say that. There are many, many lasagna soups out there on the internet. But what makes a recipe special is the person who's creating it and writing it and documenting it and sharing it. They always put their own twist on it, whatever mm-hmm. that little twist is. And in my case, obviously, I put my twist on the recipes, but then I also put them in this unique collection where there is a collection of a cookbook now of super fine recipes. But yeah, I mean, if you... Probably most of the recipes, you know, you could probably find other similar recipes like that on the internet, but not necessarily.
Well, you know,
not all of them.
Yeah. Let me ask you. So if we want to soupify something, I think of leftovers sometimes. I look in my fridge, maybe I've got a hunk of lasagna, you know, some leftover. Maybe I've got a couple pieces of chicken that I baked sitting right there. If you're going to soupify something you've got, give us a couple of examples on reaching into your fridge. And if you took, we'll make it kind of simple, I think. A lot of people make chicken and have leftovers. So let's say you have leftover chicken. You take that chicken out and you look around your pantry. What do you take and build a soup for us real quick?
All right. Well, you've asked me two different things.
That's
right. How to make a soup from your pantry and then how to soupify. And I will be honest.
Okay.
When I soupify, it's definitely not from just leftovers. Like when I soupify a dish, mm-hmm. it is a very planned out process. So let's talk about that first. How would you soupify a dish that is not soup? You know, and the first thing is you really have to understand the original dish. You know, you become deeply intimate with the underlying dish, dissect its most significant flavors and textures, and decide which are the most significant and those that would need to be present in the final soupified version. You know, ask yourself, does the underlying dish have enough substantial ingredients to make up a soup? For example, I had toyed around with the idea of making a cacio e pepe soup. But with so few ingredients, like which are basically pasta, pecorino romano cheese, and black pepper, it really wouldn't have made sense as a soup. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing to consider is, like we actually talked about this earlier, is the dish already soup-like? And if so, pick something else. Mm-hmm. And then decide, well, should it? Okay, so you picked your dish, but should it be soupified? You're not going to soupify a tuna salad sandwich. You know, you want to soupify something that will actually be, you know, pleasant to eat and interesting and enjoyable in soup form. And then you have to plan out every detail and ingredient of the soupified version before heading into the kitchen. So should it be brothy, pureed, thick, thin, chunky, hearty, light, hot or cold? And these decisions should be based on the correct characteristics of the underlying dish. So if it's a hot dish that you are soupifying, the final soup would be hot. However, There is one thing, soup recipe in my book, which is the baba ganoush soup, which is actually the only plant-based soup, delicious pureed soup based on, you know, the Middle Eastern dip baba ganoush, which is smoky eggplant and tahini. That is a cold dip, right? But the soup for that is actually hot. And then, you know, if you are going to make it a thick soup, how should it be thickened? Like with a roux or by pureeing? And for the most part, the ingredients in the soupified dish should not veer off from the underlying dish. There's a couple of exceptions. Like I did add a few things to the crab cake soup that are not necessarily like traditional crab cake. Like I think I had bell peppers in it. And then the last thing to really consider is the texture. And like, for example, the eggplant parm soup, which is a delicious flavor. So fairly easy to replicate that flavor. But how do you get that crispiness from the fried eggplant? And so that's why I put the fried cheesy breadcrumbs as a topping for the soup. So, you know, I mean, I planned out these things and I really thought them through in detail before I even headed into the kitchen. That's how I soupify. But when you're looking in your pantry or your refrigerator and you're like, gee, I have these leftovers, I want to make something. That's where the creativity comes into play. And that's where just knowing the technique of how to make a soup in general mm-hmm. helps out. Because for the most part, you always start off with, I've got for the most part, there's lots of different ways, but I always start off with some fat in a pan, whether it's butter or olive oil. For me, it's almost always olive oil. And then I saute some aromatics, usually carrots, onions, celery, garlic, maybe some herbs, maybe some crushed red pepper. And then I kind of go from there. So if it's a rotisserie chicken in the refrigerator, you can easily make a delicious soup by then adding some broth, maybe adding some other flavorings to the broth, like miso or tomato paste or pureed garlic confit.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, adding maybe some pasta to give it a little like body and then you already have cooked chicken. So you kind of just fold in the chicken at the very end. And you can do this, you know, I guess if you have a bunch of roasted vegetables or grilled vegetables, you can make a, you know, throw them in a pot with some broth and then puree them. And maybe add a little cream and you've got a beautiful roasted vegetable soup.
I was going to ask you about cream. I'm glad you brought that up because sometimes you'd have like a cream of mushroom or cream of broccoli, asparagus. Yep. How often do you use cream or do you, how do you feel about cream in a soup?
I am pro cream in a soup. I don't personally use it a ton because I just try and watch my, you know, calories and saturated fat, mm-hmm. but you don't have, you know, the great thing about adding cream to a soup, unless it's a cream of soup where really the intention is for it to be creamy, creamy soup, you often don't need to add a lot of cream mm-hmm. for a big pot of soup. So in the long run, it's not like that big of a deal. For example, the lasagna soup, which I have to say is one of my most popular recipes, which I actually just posted about today on social media, that does, I do put a little bit of cream, but it's this, I think it's a half a cup of cream for like a big pot of like 12 servings or something like that. And it's just enough to bring everything together and thicken it. And the great thing about working with cream is you don't have to be as delicate with it. The cream is hearty. It's a very high fat content. So you can bring the soup up to a boil or like a simmer or a boil and it won't break. So it's actually very easy to work with and it does add a lot.
Yeah, I love cream. I love cream. And, you know, this might veer off a little bit, but I have to ask, because I just made mashed potatoes the other day. Do you like to make mashed potatoes?
Of course.
Do you use cream or milk? Or
I actually use milk, whole milk and okay. butter.
Okay.
Sounds and good. Always garlic confit.
Oh, man. I wish I met you like a couple of years back, because that garlic confit is my new secret weapon.
And well, only by the way, my roasted garlic mashed potato recipe on my website, which I posted, you know, for Thanksgiving this year, also includes some miso. Speaking of miso. Miso okay. is like another secret ingredient that adds umami, but I feel like we should have a whole nother podcast just about umami.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah, umami, because it's interesting because you'll hear different chefs talk about, oh, it gives it kind of umami feel or umami flavor, umami this, umami that. I say, hey, mommy, come on, where'd you go? So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Well, listen, Michelle, this is great. You gave us some really great tips. Interesting. And I'm glad that you share so many beautiful dishes, not just because I love the recipes and your approach to food, but also because I think you're really, really helping people develop their skills, their style, their sharing of great food with family and friends. And I think you're really important to the food world. So I'm really happy you
Thank
came
Thank you so
here.
Much. That is very kind to say.
I hope you have a great rest of your day and let's talk soon.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
For all of you listening out there, Chef Special is part of the Believe Podcast Network. Check it out at Believe.com and follow me on Instagram at Patrick Honeywell.